family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We want to talk about some of the jurisprudential laws related to purity according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei with Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, you know, in this day and age, lots of people, especially the youngsters, they go to different centers to get their skins tattooed, and they seem to like it, basically. Yes. All right, and it's becoming somehow widespread among the culture of some of the youngsters, people or youth. Well, the question is: does this tattoo affect their wudu or ablution and ghusl?
Well, if the tattoo is merely color or it is under the skin, there's nothing on the skin to prevent mm-hmm. water from reaching it, then obviously wudu and ghusl are valid. But one has to see for himself whether the dye or the color goes under the skin or whether there is any substance on the skin left after the tattoo or not. But I think in 99 out of 100 cases, the tattoo is just is just color, and it goes under the skin, and there's nothing left on the skin to prevent water from breaching the skin. So, most of the religious scholars and the authorities are of the view that tattoos do not affect wudu and ghusl. But what is important is that we should not tattoo offensive images. That is, when you have images of animate beings, like mm-hmm. animals, loins, or let's say these things, on your skin, that makes your prayer kind of makruh.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have images visible. Okay, it makes no difference whether the image is right in front of you or it is on your skin.
Any kind of image?
Image of animate beings. Like, for example...
It depends on what culture you come from. Like, the Hindus, for example, consider the trees as animate.
No, according to our standard of definition.
And also Islam considers lots of even what we supposed to be like we think that they are objects, but they are animate, aren't they?
But do they breathe?
They don't breathe, but they are alive because they absorb minerals from the soil, the water, and they do the synthesis on their leaves and the foliages, and then they yield fruits, right?
Right.
Don't they?
But as far as I know, trees and plants do not come under this category,
uh-huh,
and so it's animates. When we talk about animates, we talk about animals because it starts with anime, okay? Mm-hmm. Animals, like...
And humans also.
Yeah, humans also.
Yes.
So if you get the picture of an animal on your skin, tattooed on your skin, it makes your prayer kind of makruh if it's visible, mm-hmm. you see? Otherwise, there's no problem.
Shoshavit, there are different kinds of tattoos.
Yes.
To my knowledge, you
of
know.
Course.
Sometimes there are like images that they project onto the skin,
mm-hmm.
right?
It is embossed? Do you mean?
Not embossed, but it's kind of like a kind of painting,
yes.
that they do, and they attach it to mm-hmm. the surface of the skin so that it remains there. Some of them are permanent, some of them are temporary.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So what about them? Do they affect the wudu or ghusl?
According to the fatwa of His Eminence, if it's just color, you know, I believe it's color. Now, if someone has a different opinion, it's not color. It's something like maybe there is something like there are substances, there is dirt or something like that remaining on the skin, or whether permanently or temporarily, mm-hmm. then it has to be removed. Otherwise, wudu.
But originally, tattoos were applied like by needles.
Yes.
Right? And the blood that was supposed to be like accumulated under the skin.
Skin, yes.
So that there would be a kind of like, you know, jigsaw-like kind of image at the end of the
yes.
day. But that was not...
Yeah, and tattoos used to be... It did exist even yes. in the early period of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And the infallible imams, they say, did not object to it.
Mm-hmm.
Had they objected, it would have been haram now.
Except for the images.
But we should
said,
also
yes.
understand that there are some Muslim sects who strongly oppose tattoos,
mm-hmm.
saying that it's a kind of, let's say, a kind of changing the creation.
Uh-huh.
Okay? You change yourself, you change your skin, which is clean and very good, perfect. You change it, you are trying to object to God that, okay, this is not the right skin mm-hmm. I want to. So this is their interpretation of tattoos.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Shawid. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio. With me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Shawid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about some of the jurisprudential laws related to purity according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Shawid, what's the ruling regarding barriers in wudu and ablution and ghusl when it's unbearably hard to remove?
Yes. When it comes to something like a barrier becoming unbearable to remove, of course, that is a valid justification.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if it is indeed unbearably hard and difficult to remove a thing which forms a barrier and which prevents water from reaching the body, then the obstacle is considered as a kind of patch. So it is simply necessary to wash it and then wipe on it, okay? You know, there are obstacles which you cannot remove. So you just need to wash it and wipe on it, okay? It depends on where it is, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If it is on your head or feet, you just wipe on it. But otherwise, you just have to wash it.
Mm-hmm.
When it's unbearably hard and difficult to remove.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's the jurisprudential law concerning wudu before the prayer time? Is it valid? I mean, like, if you make the wudu before the call to prayer.
Yes, there are some scholars who said, okay, because the time has not set in yet,
mm-hmm.
so wudu is not wajib. But of course, there are two ways, okay, two niyat we can have while making wudu. One is to be in the state of ritual purity,
mm-hmm.
which is always recommended.
Yes.
It's always good to be in the state of tahara or ritual purity.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, if the time has not set in yet, one can make wudu with this intention.
Yes.
So if you make wudu with this intention, with the intention of being in the state of ritual purity, wudu is one of the means of mm-hmm. purification. So that will suffice for wuzu. You are not going to repeat the wuzu because you just made wuzu at a time which was in which wudu was not obligatory, basically. Okay. Yes. Now, in some cases, for example, if the time is short, like you've got 5 minutes or 10 minutes to make wudu, the adhan, for example, for the prayer has not been pronounced yet, and you've got 10 minutes, it's 10 minutes before the time for prayer. Okay. This is quite acceptable according to all religious authorities because you are going to prepare yourself for wuzu, you want to make wuzu so that when the time of azan or the prayer sets in, you will immediately pray and start praying. That's okay and there's no problem.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Well, that was Sheikh Javed talking with me, enlightening us, in fact, with the answers to some of the questions I asked. Related to the jurisprudential laws, and in this particular episode, we talked about some of the jurisprudential laws related to purity according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Rahmanun Rahimun Mannanun Kareemun Salamun Aleemun Malja ilaha illahum Ghaffarun Jameelun Wahhabun Latifun Tawwabun Sami'un Basir La ilaha illahum وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
In the limelight.
According to a new report about the cost of living crisis in Britain, 1 million more people are now living in poverty in the United Kingdom compared to a year ago. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. UK ministers have been warned that more families risk falling into poverty if a lifeline hardship fund used to help struggling households buy food and heat their homes is not extended. The Local Government Association said the British government's cost of living and COVID-19 support provision, the Household Support Fund, is due to end on 31st of March. In the past 12 months, the organisation said it has provided £820 million in funding for millions of households in England facing financial hardship. The Local Government Association said ministers had not yet confirmed whether the fund will be extended into 2024-2025, leaving town halls in limbo over the implications for their budgets. According to a survey undertaken by the Local Government Association, more than 8 out of 10 local authorities that responded said financial hardship had increased in their areas over the same period. Almost a fifth of local councils said they would have to make redundancies if the Household Support Fund were to end. Two-thirds said there was no additional discretionary funding to replace what would be lost if the fund is not renewed before next April. Councillor Pete Marland, chairman of the Local Government Association's Economy and Resources Board, said, "The Household Support Fund has provided an essential lifeline for our most vulnerable residents, but our survey shows this help is needed now more than ever." Councillor Pete Marland added, "Now is not the time to scale back support. Many at-risk households continue to face considerable challenges in meeting essential living costs, with demand for support greater than when the fund was first introduced. Pete Marland added, "Ultimately, councils want to shift from providing crisis support to investing in preventative services which improve people's financial resilience and life chances, alongside a sufficiently resourced national safety net." He added, "However, without an urgent extension of the Household Support Fund for at least a year, there is a risk of more households falling into financial crisis, homelessness and poverty." The Local Government Association said the fund was first introduced in October of 2021 and allowed local councils to significantly expand the help they could give to vulnerable residents during the pandemic and the cost of living crisis. It has been subsequently extended several times, providing more than £2 billion worth of support since it was set up. The fund has been used to provide cash grants or vouchers to help people in crisis with energy, food, and other essentials. It also supports food banks, pays for food vouchers during the holidays for children eligible for free school meals, and contributes towards softening the impact of unexpected costs, such as replacing broken boilers for low-income families. The call for the hardship funding to be extended comes after MPs warned recently that there is an out-of-control crisis in local government driven by long-term funding constraints and a broken financial system. The Levelling Up Housing and Communities Committee said the problem could only be ended by the government providing billions of pounds more to local councils. Officials in the Department for Work and Pensions said it would continue to keep all existing cost-of-living measures under review. Also, councils warned free school meals during holidays will likely be withdrawn for hundreds of thousands of pupils after Easter due to the end of government funding. Local authorities and charities are urging the government to extend its Household Support Fund scheme, which was first introduced in autumn of 2021 and distributed among local councils to help those in need during the cost-of-living crisis. Originally set up to last until spring of 2022, the scheme has been extended three times, taking the total amount of funding to £2.5 billion, while England was given a further £842 million on 1st of April 2023 in order to support those in need. The fund, however, was not mentioned in the autumn statement by the Chancellor and is now due to come to an end on 31st of March. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered this story and tells us more. According to analysis that lays bare the deepening cost of living crisis in Britain, a million more people are living in poverty in the United Kingdom compared to a year ago. An analysis by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation has found that a total of 14.4 million people were estimated to be in poverty in the United Kingdom in 2021-2022. That includes 4.2 million children, with an increasing number unable to afford food or pay their energy bills. This is up from a total of 13.4 million people, including 3.9 million children, the year before. In a situation described as social failure at scale, 6 million people are living in very deep poverty, defined as being below 40% of the median income after household costs. For example, a couple with two children aged under 14 is defined as being in very deep poverty if their household income is below £14,600. Families told how they were struggling to eat healthily because they cannot afford basic food, while frontline workers said families were trapped at home because they could not afford to leave their house. Charities hit out at the funding, with Action for Children saying that millions are needlessly suffering the misery of hardship. Consumer champion Martin Lewis said the report must prompt policymakers and regulators to sit up and take note. Being in poverty is defined by the Joseph Rowntree Foundation as having an income after household costs of less than 60% of the average income for your personal familial setup. For a couple who have one child older than 14 and one younger than 14, a household income that is less than £25,300 would count as in poverty. To be in very deep poverty, the threshold falls to £16,900. For a lone parent with two children, one age 14 and one age under 14, the income threshold is £18,800. A poor couple with two children under the age of 14 would need an extra £6,200 per year to get their heads above water, and those in very deep poverty would need £12,800, the charity has estimated based on household income data from the Department of Work and Pensions. Consumer champion Martin Lewis said, "I warned at the start of the energy crisis that I was out of tools to help many on the lowest incomes. Now we have hit the stark reality that hundreds of thousands of people in the United Kingdom, even after they've had professional help from charities, are still deficit budgeting. So their income is less than their minimum necessary expenditure." Martin Lewis added, "The research smells like a clear indication the problem is getting worse." The report comes after the latest data from Citizens Advice showed that 200,000 people had come to them for crisis support, such as a referral to a food bank or emergency fund in 2023, triple the number back in 2019. Citizens Advice also estimates that some 800,000 people went for more than 24 hours without gas or electricity last year because they could not afford to top up, leaving them unable to make a hot meal or take a warm shower.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will carefully monitor the specific repercussions of the Safed operation on the occupation regime and the repercussions it left on the reality of the occupation in the occupied Palestinian north. In addition, we will go over the disputes that arose within the Netanyahu administration regarding the negotiations over a quicker exchange deal for the captives. This is while we are witness to an escalation in resistance operations in the Gaza Strip. On these issues, we have Mr. Hadi Kobayesi with us, the director of the Union Center for Research and Development. Welcome, dear professor. Mr. Hadi Kobayesi, how do you assess this missile bombardment by Hezbollah on the Kiryat Shemona settlements in response to the Zionist attacks on southern Lebanon?
These settlements were evacuated from the beginning with the official permission of the regime, meaning that they contain part of the internal defense and there are no civilians in them. They try to insinuate that there are civilian casualties, but the fact of the matter is that they are not civilians. They're actually engaged in military and defensive work in the border settlements. The resistance is not yet forced to enter. It has gained a new geographical depth. It is active on the near depth, meaning 5 to 10 kilometers. The practical effects of this bombing can be seen, the demographic effects on the level of displacement, the economic effects, and the political effects. Here are the displaced. How is the resistance exerting pressure from within? Their attacks are pretty much enough. I mean, few actions, but with great effects. The Israelis have a problem. There is a problem in reaching targets in the area adjacent to the border, so they sometimes try to aim targets that are in depth, and sometimes even in Syria. I mean, sometimes they even try to find targets in Syria as an alternative to the lack of targets and reaching targets on the American front. This is the movement and the equation that is happening with regard to the direct bombing of Kiryat Shemona. Kiryat Shemona is almost directly on the border, so it is an easy target. We're talking about a sensitive target before the Nabatea strike, before the Safed strike. They say it is a sensitive target, and there are leaks that the base of the northern region was located in Kiryat Shemona, and a place close to its vicinity was targeted.
We can read about the Safed operation in northern occupied Palestine in the Hebrew media. This operation grabbed a lot of attention as they point to a quantitative development in it, targeting Israeli military sites far from the border with Lebanon. The Safed operation was a topic of interaction on Israeli social media, where Zionist activists expressed their disappointment at their administration and army as well.
Nadav.
They're exhausting the north day after day. Why is the Israeli army not carrying out a serious operation? How will they return home in this situation?
Hudaya.
What is happening in the north is shocking.
Shaher wa Orin.
Good morning for Hezbollah, bad morning for Israel.
Engel.
Where is our deterrent force? When can they be broken? There is no longer a north.
Mr. Hadi Kubayeshi, this is a bad morning for Israel. They're exhausting the north. What is your assessment of the specific repercussions of the Safed operations on the Israeli occupation and also on the southern front of Lebanon?
The operations were very important. First, the type of the weapons used and their high-range capacity. Second, the types of the targets. They targeted the storage room, which fed the forces and planes in the northern region as well. This means the cerebellum. We can even refer to it as the leadership cerebellum. That's why the anger and excitement of the commanders and the leader of the regime rose. And of course, it exposed the inefficiency of the Israeli Iron Dome. These three elements, in fact, gave the operation a very great momentum, even though it was a test of the defenses. In addition for being a test, it also sends a message to the Northern Command that we are in the next war. We're able to reach the secret places. We're able to reach the secret places and conduct military operations against you. Bypass the defenses and bypass the Iron Dome. And we reach these places wherever we want. This is a clear message. And Israel, of course, has not released all the details except for the soldier who was killed and the definition of the unit in which she worked. He tried to make a very serious and violent reaction to this operation, and this shows the casualties must have been at the level of leadership and not only at the level of settlers and others.
Hezbollah bombs the occupied Palestinian territories whenever and however it wants and within the limit it decides itself, and this is victory for it. Hezbollah launched an operation from the military front to the reality of the internal front in northern occupied Palestine, where there was a large exodus of settlers who described this reality as a disgrace to the Israeli regime. So, Professor Hadi Kobesi, what is happening in northern occupied Palestine as a result of the confrontation with Hezbollah is a disgrace to the occupying regime. The situation cannot continue as it is. How do you explain these words of the Zionists?
I mean, it's strange. Why did they evacuate all these settlements? 40 settlements were evacuated by an official Israeli decision, and 40 other residents were evacuated, even though civilians were not targeted in the beginning. There was no targeting of homes and civilian property, nor was the Israeli army hiding inside the homes at first. But the fear, grief, and anxiety of the settlers pushed them to take this measure. And this measure means that they bear their responsibility. The responsibility for settlers who evacuated voluntarily and for the settlements which were ordered to evacuate. Some Israeli commentators said that this decision was a failure and an unjustified decision. It is not clear that they can solve this problem by lending loans to the settlers and stopping the war in Gaza. As for the options available, they should take into account the possibility of making reactions. Reactions mean pushing back into the war to an ambush other than the Gaza ambush. Of course, this war is destructive, but all parties will be destroyed. Israel will not survive if we enter into a regional war, and this has been the deterrent so far since the beginning of the war, especially with regard to the fact that even after the war, their forces will still be busy in the Gaza Strip.
The occupation army will not be able to release the captives in the hands of the resistance in Gaza in the same way it released the two prisoners in Rafah who were in the possession of a Palestinian family a few days ago, so an exchange deal must be made. The hourglass for the release of the captives runs out quickly. With Netanyahu's intransigence in the truce and the captives' exchange negotiations in Cairo and with the possibility of losing them if this situation continues. On the other hand, the differences within the Netanyahu administration over the negotiations of the captives exchange deal and the way to deal with it reached the point of excluding Gantz and Eisenkot from participating in this decision. Against the backdrop of disagreements within the Zionist War Administration regarding the captives' exchange deal negotiations, disagreements arose between Minister Ben-Gvir and Chief of Staff Helvi, which reached the point of rebuke. Mr. Hadi Kobayesi, the Chief of Staff is being reprimanded by Ben-Gvir. Why is the scale of disagreement increasing today within the occupation leadership despite the continuation of the war?
Of course, in contrast to the basic conditions before the war, there was a right-wing trend that had a demanding and always loud and extremist public. And this public was ready to change the leadership, meaning Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, or some other leaders that the last elections produced. But there are competitors, to say the least, in this area, and they are trying to maintain their demanding presence. With the complexities of the field in Gaza and the failure to achieve results at the level of publicity goals, this has increased friction within the administration. Now that we're talking, Gantz has already begun direct communication with the Americans, and Netanyahu has begun to distance himself from Gantz. These are all internal disputes. In fact, Netanyahu is negotiating about the captives. Yes, and he is negotiating. Ben-Gvir, Gantz, the Americans, and Hamas. I mean, he has 4 to 5 elements that he is taking on at the same time. There are great complications. He is now trying to reach a result, telling the right-wing public that we made all our attempts. We arrived at Rafah and we turned over every stone. But we did not reach a result, and we continued to negotiate after we did everything we had to do and weakened Hamas to the greatest extent. This is what the Americans did to us. They seem to have no problem with that, with some treatments related to the displaced people.
Okay, Mr. Hadi Kobayesi, Netanyahu declines to send an Israeli delegation to Cairo for the negotiations. In your opinion, do you see this as an act of pressure or has he forgotten the negotiations?
There's no escape, and they will have to return to the negotiating table at the end of the day.
They must have tried the maximum number of attempts but failed. Thanks to him, they're not paying large prices regarding the number of the captives. Now they have mentioned 3 captives for 1 Palestinian abductee and 100 female captives for every Palestinian abductee. So the discussion is easy. Hamas will reach an area of weakness, a point of weakness, or a moment of retreat after entering Rafah. This current Israeli attempt to enter Rafah will not be an easy job, as it has not yet accomplished its job in Khan Yunis, and it is possible that things will also be complicated and difficult in Rafah.
In fact, the strong attacks that the resistance is delivering against the occupation forces in Khan Yunis, south of the Gaza Strip, continue with intensity, despite the enemy leaders' propaganda that these attacks are coming to an end there. The video published by the occupation army claiming that it was of Commander Yahya Sinwar inside one of the tunnels with his wife and children and dating back to the third day after the Operation Al-Aqsa flood aroused interest within the regime. And a former Zionist military official said that this video could not be celebrated except after Sinwar was killed and not before that. Contrary to what the publisher of the video intended, it showed that the occupation regime is incapable of reaching Commander Sinwar and the rest of the Qassam commanders. Mr. Habib Kubaisi, how come this video clip and the allegations were published by the occupation regime against al-Sinwar and yet it is ridiculed in the Hebrew media, as we've seen?
First, let us talk about Khan Yunis. As Gallant said, it is already too late. It is a mockery in the face of the Israeli army. Yes, it was 12 days. I mean, the Israelis, regarding the issue of eliminating the structure of Hamas, lied to themselves and their fans, and this really needs to be clarified, because that is practically the entire achievement. What he is presenting is an empty achievement so far. The resistance is showing its capabilities in all the regions, meaning in the north, the south, and the center. It is a great, organized, and effective capability that has daily performance. I mean, after Hamas has double pressure, he is building negotiations on the basis that we have arrived and reduced brigades, but this will lead to a disaster for him. About this video, first of all, it is clear that he is wearing summer clothes. The Israeli media said that it was October the 10th, meaning 5 months ago, 4 months ago, or a little while ago. But it is clear that he is wearing summer clothes. What does this mean? This is a very old video. I found it on surveillance cameras.
This is an insult against the Israeli interior.
He is thirsty for achievements as long as he watches Al-Qassam videos. He needs to produce effective videos. His videos are always commented on by the fact that these are videos of one-party shooting, but there are no targets, meaning in open areas. This is why Al-Qassam videos always contain surprises. Everyone has problems with the image of their videos, and they're trying to compensate for this defect by saying that we eliminated them.
The focus is always on Commander Yahya al-Sinwar, and why?
Because he seems to be the one who committed the historical deception that began with imprisonment, and later on, he means that the problem is with the political deception that happened before October 7th. This is the basic crisis or psychological setback that they suffered from, which is the reason for the action or path that is taking place.
Hamas has returned to northern Gaza. This is a literal description of the Zionist knowledge of the reality of life in the Jabalia and Shujaya camps after the occupation forces withdrew from large areas in the northern Gaza Strip. Hamas returns, Mr. Hadi Kubaisi. What do you think of what this Israeli analyst reported about the reality of Shujaya, about the Jabalia camps, about his words about the return of resistance in the northern regions?
Yes, in all areas, meaning even in Gaza, in the west of Gaza, in the center, in the south. Today, in Rafah, there was a course for Quran reciters. This shows activities, police activity, activity by the Islamic Endowment, activity even in distributing aids, security activity. This means Hamas exists, and all of its factions are present on sufficient territory in almost all of the territories of the Strip. Do the Israelis understand that it was terrible when they took the decision to begin confrontation about 20 years ago in the borders of the Gaza Strip specifically? We're talking about how they are built psychologically and how they are built culturally. And now they have also built a serious military challenge for the occupation regime, and yet they exist. The occupation does not see them above the ground because they are not present above the ground. I mean, they are actually fighting this war from under the ground. And this experience is unprecedented, because when forces and armies generally make trenches, they make them for defense, and they make them to avoid receiving shocks. But here, the resistance uses these tunnels for conducting the fight through them. Now, the Israelis have understood what was exactly happening. They claim that they have destroyed the brigades, but sometime later, these brigades become active again. So they really have no idea how to describe the results and the path they were taking.
Director of the Union Center for Research and Development, Professor Hadi Kubayesi, thank you very much for your participation in Israel Watch, and thank you. Until we meet again, take care.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فاجر. السلام عليكم and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Karim, brothers and sisters, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Here we are with a series of Quranic sessions on practical tajweed rules and short tafsir classes or explanatory classes. I'm really happy that I have Brother Fawad Haider with me here today, inshallah, from Sevilla International School. Today, inshallah, we'll talk about Surah An-Nisa. We'll start Surah An-Nisa. In the current script, we have it as the fourth Surah, right?
Yes.
And yes, Surah Nisa, which means the women, okay? Surah of women or Nisa. Inshallah, we'll talk about the first ayah and we'll practice the tajweed rules on the first ayah of Surah An-Nisa. So, before we start, Fawad, I really welcome you. How are you?
I'm fine, sir.
Inshallah. So, we'll inshallah, together we'll practice this ayah. First, let's listen to the recitation.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا.
Nice one, nice recitation. So once again, I'm telling you, we're on page 77 of the Quran Kareem, Surah An-Nisa, verse 1 or ayah 1. So let's have a short explanation. Fawad, yes?
Yes.
Then inshallah we'll practice the tajweed rules. So let me read once. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Allah Almighty in Surah An-Nisa verse 1 says, يَا أَيُّهَا النَّاسُ اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمُ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُم مِّن نَّفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ الَّذِي خَلَقَكُم مِّن نَّفْسٍ وَاحِدَةٍ وَخَلَقَ مِنْهَا زَوْجَهَا وَبَثَّ مِنْهُمَا رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامَ إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. It's a beautiful ayah. But first, Fawad, do you know how many verses does Surah An-Nisa have? 176 verses, okay, or ayat. Surah An-Nisa has. And this surah mostly talks about issues related to women, okay? Issues related to women. And also in this surah, things about inheritance, irth or mirath, okay?
Yes.
Allah Almighty talks about different, a lot of rules, okay? So this surah, Allah Almighty explains a lot of rulings, Islamic rulings, or ahkam, mostly related to, frequently kind of, related to women. So, that's why it's called, this surah is taken from that, the name is taken from that word, Nisa, in the first ayah. رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً. Okay? So what does Allah Almighty say here in the first ayah? It's very important. Allah Almighty says, O mankind, Allah Almighty talks to all the human beings, not Muslims only. Not only the people who believe. يَا أَيُّهَا
النَّاسُ.
This Hamzatul Wasl and Lam, this Lam al-Ta'rif, it tells us that it consists all the human beings. Every single person, okay? This Lam al-Ta'rif. O mankind, be wary of your Lord. اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم. The Lord who created you from a single soul. من نفس واحدة. From Adam alayhi salam. So first Allah Almighty created Adam alayhi salam. Then from Adam alayhi salam, he scattered a lot of human beings. And created its mate from it. وخلق منها زوجها. وَبَثَّ مِنْهُمَا رِجَالًا كَثِيرًا وَنِسَاءً. And from the two of them scattered numerous men and women. Then what Allah Almighty says? وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهَ. Be wary of Allah. الَّذِي تَسَاءَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامِ. In whose name you adjure one another. And the wombs. اتَّقُوا اللَّهَ. اتَّقُوا رَبَّكُمْ. And اتَّقُوا أَرْحَامِ. It means be careful about or pay attention, or I mean, keep your relationships, okay, with your family and friends, with your relatives. Care about these things. Inna Allaha kana alaykum raqiba. Indeed, Allah Almighty is watchful over you. So, what is the message of this ayah? In short, I'll say, then inshallah, we'll quickly move on to the tajweed rules. The message is this, that Allah Almighty says, I have created you from one soul. Right, so there might be a lot of people, okay, who think like, hey, you're black, you're African, I don't care about it. I don't respect you because you're black, okay, I don't care you, you're Asian, I don't care about you, okay, I don't respect you, racism, okay, so Allah Almighty is saying no to racism, and Allah Almighty is not talking only to Muslims, to the believers, yeah, ayyuhan
nas.
To all human beings. Hey, come on, don't think like you're from, like for example, from Australia. You think you're like a great man. You're from, for example, Azerbaijan. You're from Turkey. You're from Afghanistan. You're from Iran, America, Canada. No matter, okay, where you're from. It's just you're living on the earth. Okay? You're not living, for example, in the heaven. You're living on the earth. We all are the same on the earth. We all are being created from one soul. And that's all, right? This is an important message. And we, inna Allaha alaykum Raqiba, Allah Almighty is watchful over you. Okay? Inna Allah kana alaykum raqiba. We should say, no room for
racism.
That's all.
قرآني في قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات المولى.
IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Xavier International Schools presents
والكون الواسع في صدري أحضنه غرضا.
Let's recite the Quran.
Let's move on to the Tajweed. And I want you, inshallah, Fawad, and our brothers and sisters who are listening to IRIB English Radio, I want them to refer to the Tafsir books, okay? History books, Ahadith books, inshallah, to learn more about the details about these verses, inshallah, this ayah. So, let's mention some tajweed rules, then together for what? We will practice the recitation, and our brothers and sisters also will practice, all right? So, ready?
Yes.
The first important rule is about the mad here in the word, ya ayyuha. What do you think? Is that one word, ya ayyuha?
Actually, it's a compound word,
Good job. Ya stands for unadi. It means, I call you, stands, okay? I call upon you. Or, oh, mankind, ya ayyuhan nas. It's just kind of a calling sound, okay? It has that meaning. So, ya stands for one word. Ayyu stands for another word. Ha stands for another word. Three words are here. So, ya and ayyu, our focus is on these two words. Ya ayyu. So, the mad, harful mad, is with ya. Yes, the alif mat.
Yes.
Sound. Then hamza is with the word ayyu. The rule says, if the hamza and the mat both are in the same word, one word, in one word.
Yes.
So the mat is wajib and you must stretch it, extend the sound for six or five counts. Yeah. But if they are in separate words, no matter it's a compound word, they are in separate words. So it's not obligatory. It's optional.
Optional.
So here it's optional. Ya ayyuhan nasu, or you can skip the mad. Ya ayyuhan nasu. All right, that's it. Ha has an alif mad, but the next word has a hamzatul wasl and lam ta'rif and then nun mushaddad. Here you skip the alif mad. Ha becomes shorter. Ha, then join it with the nun. Alif will be skipped, hamzatul wasl will be skipped here, alif will be skipped here, lam is as well, because noon is a sun letter, lam is also skipped here. So you read it, ya ayyuha, join it, connect it to noon.
Ya ayyuhan
hannasu. And noon mushaddad produces a nasal sound also. Hannasu ittaqu, hamzatul wasl it has. So join the scene to ta, skip hamzatul wasl. We had two cases for hamzatul wasl, either skip it or pronounce it. Here we skip it because we join the previous word with the word having hamzatul wasl.
Yes.
Na, join it with the ittaqu. Suttaqu rabbakum alladhi, I'll pronounce it correctly. Khalaqa, two heavy letters, one light letter. Khalaqa, 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 kum, kum min mushaddad. Pronounce it with like two counts. Kum min, again nun mushaddad, idgham, merge the sound and nasal sound. Min nafsin, tanween plus waw, merge
idgham.
Them. Idgham. Min nafsi wahidati wa khalaqa minha zawjaha wa batha minhuma rijalan kathira. Tanween plus kaf, hide the sound of tanween. Ikhfa, mashallah. Rijalan kathira, merge idgham. Wa nisa an. But if you stop at a word that ends with tanween fatha, tanween fatha will be changed to nisa'an, will be changed to
nisa'a.
Nisa'a, alif mat, mashallah. Nisa'a. The baby jim on the top tells us
It's jais. You can just continue or stop. There's no difference between them.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. Next one. Wattaqullaha inna... Sorry. Wattaqullaha alladhi. So, ha with alladhi. Alladhi. Merge them together. Join them. Halladhi tasa'aluna. This mad is wajib.
Yes.
Obligatory. You got to stretch it for 6 counts. So because Hamza and Alif Mad both are in the same word. تَسَأَلُونَ بِهِ وَالْأَرْحَامِ. Stop here. إِنَّ اللَّهَ. Pronounce the word Allah with an A sound. إِنَّ اللَّهَ كَانَ عَلَيْكُمْ رَقِيبًا. بَن رَقِيبًا رَقِيبًا. So, ready to read this? Okay, let's go. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Good job. Let's read together as well. I will read once, okay? Then we'll read together. Our brothers and sisters will help us through, okay?
يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم. يا أيها الناس اتقوا ربكم الذي خلقكم.
ما شاء الله. الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها.
الذي خلقكم من نفس واحدة وخلق منها زوجها وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء وبث منهما رجالا كثيرا ونساء.
أحسن.
واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام. واتقوا الله الذي تساءلون به والأرحام. إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا. إن الله كان عليكم رقيبا.
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters. We hope inshallah you have learned this and this session was beneficial for you. Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks Fawad for being with us and practicing with us today. Inshallah, next session will continue with Surah An-Nisa. Thanks to Arab English Radio. Thank you so much, brothers and sisters, for being with us. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور. آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه. لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
We are with you. What about you? Meaningful Moments with IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.